everybody, this is Justin Michael Williams with Motivation for Black People, giving you trusted guidance to make your life better. And I have to tell you guys, this interview that we are going to have today has been, so I'm going to be honest with y'all, like I'm excited for all of my interviews, and you hear her giggling in the background, okay, because I'm excited for all of our interviews, but every once in a while, there's an interview that I get a little extra excited about, and this is one of those interviews. I have Raw Goddess on the line, and y'all are, just get ready, okay, because Raw is an entrepreneurial soul coach, and she's been behind the curtains and behind the scenes to give breakthroughs to some of the biggest change makers and cultural visionaries and entrepreneurs of our lifetime. She has literally worked with people from multiple New York Times bestsellers to multi-million dollar social enterprises, and she has this unique methodology and a new book that is incredible called The Calling. And we are going to be able to dive super deep today with Raw. And really, I think one of the things that I can just be selfishly personally excited about is people pay a lot of money to get coaching from this woman. So I'm on, and now I get to be on the line talking to her. And we all get to reap the benefits of such a grounded, soulful, powerful Black goddess woman in the world doing amazing work that not just helps us anchor into our spirits, but also get paid and do the work that we were meant to do in this world, the real deep work. And, you know, if you haven't heard of Raw Goddess, really, she's been featured by Time Magazine, Variety, Essence, literally, she was named as the top 10 game changer by Muses and Visionaries Magazine in 2017. And so if you don't know about her, you bout to know. And Raw, welcome to the Motivation for Black People podcast. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh, Justin, thank you so much for having me. And I will tell you that your excitement is contagious. Like, I'm feeling it as well. Because, like I told you before, I've been eavesdropping on your work. And I'm like an instant fan, truly an instant fan. So it's a joy to be here and be with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And, you know, I'm going to get into your story and what got you into this work in a moment. But I think one of the things that I want to frame this conversation with is just around your book and the topic from the book and these three pillars that you really have, you know, that anchor the work in a way that brings it together in a way that people don't expect. But I think it's some of the most important work that we can be doing. So can you just give the listeners just a brief moment to kind of give them the snapshot of why this work and why this conversation is so vitally important?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we are in a moment in a time, you know, where people are looking, hungering, thirsting, craving, you know, for what is theirs, to do in the world, and also craving for the opportunity to do it as themselves, you know. So, you know, we are watching economy and culture being remade in real time, and people are questioning and redefining success in real time. And because we are asking ourselves those bigger questions, we're listening. We're listening and we're looking. And, you know, I think as much as we can, you know, sort of lean into the chaos of our times, I will also say to you that our times present a grand opportunity. And, you know, particularly the last 6 or 7 years have awakened more people. Than I think perhaps in ever before. And so so now that we're awakened on whatever level we are waking up and shaking and being shaken up, we're asking those big questions and we're seeking for what is ours and we're seeking for the truth of ourselves.
Yes.
And so that's what I believe, you know, this book has sort of found its way among those folks.
This is fantastic. And I love the way you frame the calling, you know, and I think what's so amazing is for everyone who has an interest in really stepping into a life that they were born to live, like the life that they, not the life that they're given based on their circumstances, but the life that they truly were born to live. This book and the methodology that you provide and the step, it's like really a blueprint is the way that I feel about it, to really finding your purpose. And this is the piece that people don't want to talk about, right? About finding your purpose and making money and being profitable about it so that you can do the good that you want to do in the world, you know? And so what inspired you? Because we have a lot of stuff around finding your purpose, living your passion, you know, all this. What inspired you to want to really weave in this element of money, getting paid, and doing good? Where does that intersection come into play for you?
So for me, I mean, this work represents 30 years on the front lines of our humanity, listening and supporting leaders from every walk of life, from every aspect of service, and being able to find and deliver on what it is that they're here to do in the world. And, you know, the integration of the stay true, get paid, do good is because we need all three.
Yes.
You know, it's exactly to your point, right? It's like, you know, if we have authenticity without contribution, well, that's just a lot of, you know, navel gazing. Or you have contribution without finance, you know, that's a recipe for non-sustainability. And so to your point, I felt like, and it's one of the reasons why our company exists and why we wrote the book, and I wrote the book in the way that I wrote it. And thank you for acknowledging it as a blueprint, because that was the intention. Was, I think we have a lot of philosophy and ideology moving around and not enough practicum.
Amen.
Not enough how do you, but okay, great, I'm on board, but now actually what are the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 steps that are going to get me there? And I think, you know, people have bought into the ideologies, but have been at a loss.
Can I just one second to really anchor this for people? You said, what are the steps that are going to get me there? Where is there?
Yeah. So I believe that there is about our purpose and our calling. And it really, for me, is the new definition of success.
Yeah.
So we are interested in, whether we know it or not, whether we can claim it for ourselves or not, we are now interested in defining success on our own terms. We're not only interested in defining it, we're interested in achieving it. So when we talk about what the there is, I want to be living my life as myself, making my unique contribution. Mm-hmm. And what is it going to take to get me back home to me in my mind, in my heart, and in my spirit, doing that which is mine to do and offering that which is mine to offer to the world?
Yes. And so how did you, Ra, goddess, get to this place? Because I know you have had a story, and I'll let you tell it. But like, you know, you weren't always in this space of working with some of the biggest leaders in our planet. But you've been steeped in the work at the same time. So I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about how you got here to this point of you getting to your there.
Yeah, I came kicking and screaming. Like truly kicking and screaming and literally at gunpoint. You know, I was living in Brooklyn at the time. I had a nice little comfortable consulting gig. I had, you know, the sort of from the outside looking in, I had checked all of the boxes, you know, and some would even assume that I was doing it my way, you know, doing good work, but not doing my work. Which was a distinction I came to understand fully as I kind of went into this, right?
Yeah.
But basically, I was coming home and walking up my walkway, and a guy pulls up on a bike, and at the time, I'm living in Brooklyn, and we have a little bit of an exchange, and he pulls a gun. And I remember feeling this beam of energy come down through the top of my head and root me all the way down through the soles of my feet. And I remember my mouth opening and me just basically saying to him, brother, I don't have anything for you. And he threatened to shoot, and he did, repeatedly. And it was point blank range. I mean, literally, he was probably about maybe 10 or 15 feet from me. And he and I were both having an out-of-body experience because we were both very, very clear that he had shot me. But somehow the bullets did not penetrate. But let me say that they physically did not penetrate, but they spiritually, mentally, emotionally, I got the message.
Yes.
And, you know, like many of us, dodging, ducking, running, hiding, doing what's comfortable, doing what we can get away with, doing what other people expect of us, you know, fill in the blank. And And it was my first of many wake up moments around, like, you need to get on your own path. You know, you're called to something. There is work that you are here to do. And, you know, that was the point where I was like, okay, the universe, like, either we're going to do it or, you know, or we're taking you out of here.
Yes. My God. I mean, and I resonate so, everybody who's listening who knows my story knows how deeply I resonate with this because, you know, I always say that God, the universe, the presence, whatever we want to call it, it tries to whisper at us at first to be nice.
Hello. Right. Yes, I'm about this too, Justin.
And then if we ain't listening, and this is why the practices are so important, you know, of listening and going deep within are so important, because if we don't have the ability to, or the know-how to have that deep relationship with our inner self to listen, then we do have to get hit upside the head or shot or sick or somebody has to die or something to hopefully try to wake us up, you know? And I just feel so grateful that, I mean, I'm sad that you had to deal with that to get here, but I'm so grateful that you listened to the call, that I just tied into the call and the calling. So I got it, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to kind of shift focus here just a slight little bit about something that I found really interesting in the towards the beginning of your book, pretty early on. You introduced this concept called the trade. Mm-hmm. And talking about, well, I'll let you. So can you talk about what is the trade and how does it affect most of us as it comes to our calling?
Yeah, we have all been conditioned to trade, whether it is money for freedom, love for finance, free time for, you know, what we believe is somebody else's version of success. And we've been indoctrinated to a fundamental belief system that we have got to give something up, and we've got to give something up that's painful to us in order to have whatever this version is of success. Mm. And so the first belief that we've got to address, or the first sort of structural sense of conditioning that we've got to attack, is this idea that we must trade.
Yeah.
This idea that we must trade, that this belief that we cannot have joy and profitability, that we cannot have authenticity and work that we love, that we cannot have, you know, and kind of fill in the blank. And it's important for me because so much of what our societal conditioning operates around and our social constructs operate around are these negotiations that ultimately wind up adding up and costing us in ways that we can't even imagine.
Right.
You know, and it isn't always in the big sweeping choices we make, Justin. Sometimes it's in those little micro choices that we make in a moment. And it's sort of little by little, day by day, there is this slow creep that moves us further and further and further away from the truth of who we are, or further and further and further away from the life we were meant to live, or further and further away from the relationships that we're supposed to have, or the quality of the relationships that we're supposed to have. And so if we come in the door believing, expecting, and looking for the need to trade those critical, crucial parts of ourselves, then we're already beginning at a deficit when it comes to our own power.
And this goes for, like, so many people. I mean, I even know for me, like, at first believing I had to trade my desires to be artistic and to do music to be successful and to have money. Or some people think they have to trade being able to be in a relationship to have a successful business, or they have to trade, you know, traveling or having kids in order to work with their passion, or if I have kids, I can't do this. So these are the kind of almost agreements that we make with ourselves from jump.
And our health and well-being is in there too, right? Yeah. We trade our health and well-being because we believe that we need to be on that treadmill 24/7. You know, we need to be getting to the next accomplishment, the next achievement, the next thing. And so, you know, it's so ingrained and it's so subconscious. Like, we don't even realize often that we're doing it.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's been ingrained into us. So how do you, so when people say this, you know, people say, oh, if it's like your health, your money, your passion, your relationship, like, pick three, you can't have all of them. And what you're saying is false. This
correct.
Is not true. So, okay, so if this is not true, what lens do we need to be looking through now to shift that paradigm?
Yeah. The first thing is that we don't need to have everything. We just need to have what matters.
Amen. I love this. And so, the way you teach. I love this.
Do you know what I mean? And so the first thing that we get to ask ourselves, and I'm, you know, we're so on the same page about creating space and time to listen to you, because I will say to you that your ability to listen to you, your ability to hear you, your ability to be guided by you, and I mean the big you, right? You know, your higher self, your source, however you describe it, your ability to be in sacred, holy relationship with your inner wisdom and your inner guidance is the revolution, is the revolution. Because the first question you want to be asking yourself is what matters, is what is important to me. We've been handed a slate of things, or we've been told what's supposed to be important to us. But when we really drill into the center of it and we start to ask ourselves those questions, we actually find that we come up with a very different list from what it is that we've been handed. And I think one of the greatest crimes and travesties is when we reach that pinnacle of success, but we still feel hollow and empty inside.
Yeah.
We still feel unfulfilled, and we have no idea why, because we've done the thing that everyone told us we were supposed to do. We've checked all the boxes that everyone said we were supposed to check, right? You know, in every aspect of our life, but somehow happiness didn't arrive, or somehow fulfillment didn't arrive. And so, you know, I believe that success is about alignment. And I believe that alignment comes from our willingness to be intimately related to what it is that we value, intimately related to our unique combination of talents, gifts, and abilities, and intimately related to that thing that is calling us, that passionate impulse to address the opportunities or challenges that are facing our humanity and facing our world.
This is just so important. I love you. I like, and in like the most genuine way, not in like a fangirl, like this, the way you are speaking is, I think, the most important messages that we can be having on the planet at this time. And we're just getting started, which is what's amazing to me. And what I want to ask you about as it relates to this concept of understanding what you really want versus what you think you're expected to want, that's, I think, a real tangible approach for people that I'd love to break down with you, Roz, this element about getting paid. And,
yeah.
You know, I think one of the things that I've heard you say and that I've read in your book is like having us understand what we actually want or need. I don't know that the word need is appropriate, but what we actually want when it comes to getting money, because some people think, oh, well, I need to have 7 figures to be successful. Some people think I need to be making 6 figures to be successful. Some people think whatever to be successful. And you have this process of helping people go through and do the work to understand how to identify what we actually need for ourselves. So I'd love for you to give people that concept, but then also if you'd be willing to break down some steps for people to start asking, because I think it's a powerful, tangible way to start this inner inquiry for people.
Yeah, how do we get to our money truth? Mm-hmm. That's what I call it in the book, our money
that's
truth. And, you know, and it has everything to do with how we begin to recognize what our relationship with money is and how we've inherited a set of notions or messages or beliefs about how it is supposed to be or how it should be. The big mythology around this, Justin, is that we assume that people who have money have a different experience than people who don't have money. And I will tell you that I have found universally that these challenges occur whether people have money or don't have money. It's rather about our state of mind and our state of heart when it comes to how we think about our resources.
Yeah.
And so the first thing that we've got to really understand is, what do we believe when it comes to money? What is it that we believe when it comes to doing business? What is it that we believe? And then to understand, what is it about what we believe that we've that either supports our vision for the kind of life we want to live or hinders our vision for the kind of life we want to live, right? So, and I'm going to give you an example. There is an assumption sort of immediately that more money equals more ease.
Right.
And that is not always the case. you know, to quote the famous Biggie Smalls, more money, more problems.
More problems.
Depending, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a deeper conversation we want to have, which is really what is our philosophy about our lifestyle and the way that we want to live? And how do we begin to get really clear about, well, do we want a more sort of complex and fancy existence, or do we want a more simpler and quieter existence, right? And there's no judgment for either side. It's all about what supports you in being truthfully expressed in the world, right? So the first thing is like, how do we start to even tell the truth about what we've inherited or what we understand or what we know about our current relationship, where those messages have come from, to what degree do those messages support us or do they get in the way of what it is we want to accomplish or want to achieve or want to express? And then to start to look at, like, if you had the ability, which we do, and I talk about this in the book, to actually shape your own economy, what would it look like? Mm. And for me, this conversation of money, truth, and economy were critical to incorporate in the book because a lot of us, when we hear the term economy, we think it exists out there.
Right.
We assume, right, we hear GDP and we hear, you know, all of these other very fancy terms and we see experts in, you know, dark blue suits. And a lot of us kind of like, okay, that's like way over my head. I have no idea what all of that means ultimately in terms of what, whether or not I'm going to be able to feed my family.
Right.
And the game changer for me was moving from this place of being someone who resisted capitalism to actually being moving to this place of someone who wanted to create my own economy and invite people into back into their right to participate in economies that enable them and others to be healthy and thriving.
This is so beautiful.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in your money truth, you get to start to look at how do I want to make my money and how do I want to spend my money? Because that is what the economy is built on, how we acquire and how we spend. And so when you start to go, okay, well, what is important to me and how I earn my money? Well, it's important to me that I'm doing something that's part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that in some way, shape, or form, I'm making people's lives better. What's important to me when I look at how I'm spending money? That I'm supporting and sustaining businesses that are also sharing that same commitment. So then we start to look at, wow, how do my money and my values start to exist in the same conversation, which is again something that we've traditionally been taught we've had to trade.
Right.
Right. In other words, you doing business over here and then you're living your values and your principles over here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're dismantling that. In the book I'm saying no. I'm saying your money truth is rooted in your values and what you value and what you say is important in how you spend and in how you earn, and that you actually get to architect that and create that from the ground up.
This is great. And you know, okay, so I'll get, if I can go there with you and get a personal question that I think a lot of people will resonate with, and I've never said this on the podcast, but I was just having a conversation last night that was really dynamic with a couple of friends that I'm staying with right now in Virginia who are also just like deep soul warriors who are doing conscious, amazing work in the world. And, you know, having this conversation with them about, okay, so, and maybe there's a trade-off happening in my head here. So I want you to see, because I think there's a lot of people that might have this. So there is this desire that I have and a commitment that I've always had to provide tools for healing and transformation for people who are like my sister, who is a mom with kids making not that much money, who would never in her life probably be able to afford a mastermind coaching program for $10,000 in a year or something like that. And then talking with different people of like, okay, well, you should have one offering that's like a cheaper offering for these people, and then like another offering that's like the deeper offering. But then I'm like, well, but then the people who I really want to give this work to will never get the deeper thing because I made the cheap thing for them. And so like, how do I reckon this idea of not just having like, oh, well, I have this $10,000 program that I can give five scholarships to, but like, how do I create real equity in the system for the people, especially when I'm looking at Black people who historically have not had the financial wealth to be able to invest in things like self-care until just this generation, you know? Yeah. So how do we, and how do you reckon with those things as we're moving forward and have entrepreneurs who are trying to do real good and trying to provide for people who are living, you know, you get what I'm saying.
I do get what you're saying. So a couple things, right? Because some of this is also about the model that you choose, right? And so I'm going to sort of give you a strategic answer, and then I'm going to give you a spiritual answer.
Cool.
Okay? So I'm going to go with the strategic answer first. So there are lots of models, and we see it with Warby Parker, we see it with Tom's Shoes, where in the context of social impact, where those of us who can afford your services are willing to pay more to create space and opportunity for those who may not be able to support your services. And there is a way to integrally build that into the model. Right. And this is a cooperative economic model, you know, that, again, we have the opportunity to take advantage of and the opportunity to work inside of as we're building what we're building. And there's a real sense of, for me, a sense of responsibility and community where I come in to do business with you. And I understand that doing business with you means that I'm standing to make room for someone else.
Yeah.
I'm standing to pay it forward. And it's integral to the way that we do business together. So whether it is I come and I do what I do and I love the work so much that I want to now invest to create opportunities for others to do the work, or whether it's just I know it's built into my pricing. So if I do your mastermind or I do your retreat or I do whatever it is that you're offering at that higher end, that I understand that integral to that investment is about creating space and opportunity for other people. At a fundamental level, what we have to understand, and I'm speaking particularly to entrepreneurs of color, is that money is infinite. Mm. That money is energy. It's energy. It's resource, meaning it is of the source. And the source is infinite. And we have the opportunity to work and play in ways that make the pie bigger. And so our willingness to trust that, our willingness to engage from that place enables us then to start to think about and be more creative about the kinds of models that we want to develop that give room and space for other people to stand with us in the transformation that we're calling for, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that is the strategic on its way to the spiritual answer. The spiritual answer is that anybody that you are serving at the quote-unquote top of the funnel with the $15 thing or the $10 thing, you're committing to a transformation that is not going to keep them at the same place that they're at.
Right.
And so when we serve people in the context of Move the Crowd, anything that I'm offering needs to be opening the gateway to move you from point A to point B, and from point B to point C, and from point C to point D. And I say this again because in the context of communities of color, we do not consciously think and plan for the movement of our people in the way that we work with them.
Mm.
Right? Poor is not a destination as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
It is a state of mind. And our ability to transform that, no matter where people may be standing in a physical reality, our ability to work in ways that consciously go to work and transforming that are the things that open the door for somebody who couldn't afford your mastermind 2 years ago to being somebody who can afford your mastermind. And that actually becomes integral to your mission, is that you grow people in a way where they get to come along for the ride. Oof. Or even better, you get to come along for the ride in their success, their evolution, their transformation. And you design and architect your work that way.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
For me, it's like you, if you're working with me, I have to consciously be going, I know that the next place I want to take you is a $1,500 program. So what is it that we need to do to get you from a $200 program to a $1,500 program in the context of where you're headed? Yeah. In terms of your own vision for success. So in other words, if I'm serving you well, you will have the capacity to continue to work with me as long as it makes sense.
Mm,
As long as it's contributing to the growth and the evolution that you're here to offer.
That you're here to offer, and that vision is for your life, you know.
Correct.
Because then otherwise we're just coercing and forcing people and convincing them to do things that they don't need, right? And so if we're really looking at the highest good, then it's only if it's a match. And this is beautiful. Well, selfishly, thank you, but not selfishly, because I know everybody else, like tons of entrepreneurs will take that. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting, just feeling into what wants to be said right now. So the idea, and we're talking about now people of color and the systemic, you know, issues that may have caused many of us to be at an economically disadvantaged place comparatively to other peoples. How do you find that, not just economically, but the systemic issues that we're facing? And now this generation, I've been saying this generation, you know, we've been paid for. Like our ancestors had to give up thinking about life purpose and mental health and manifesting and all that so that we could even have the opportunity to have this choice. So what do we do now, considering that there are still issues that we're facing today and there still is a system that we're living in today, to actually help us live that vision? Because I see, like, I imagine, you know, like the great grandfathers out there who were genius artists and who were genius, who never had a chance to see their vision come to reality. And yes, we are free today, but we still got some ways to go, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you navigate and reconcile that? Like, we're in the system, but we have some freedom. Where do we go? How do we move forward as a people?
Yeah, the first thing is we must stand for our own mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical and financial liberation. Like, it's just, it's got to be a non-starter, right? In other words, if we're not doing those things, nothing else is happening, right? And I say that because as people of color, it's always been negotiable. You want to talk about the trade. No one has traded more.
No one.
In the context of this reality, no one has traded more. Yeah. You know, in other words, we've given up generations of our families, right, to build this dream. And so, you know, we have to recognize, and I'm going to say this, and this is provocative, but it's necessary. We have to recognize that we've arrived. We've arrived enough where we now get to say that this is no longer negotiable.
Yes.
My health and well-being, no longer negotiable. Healthy relationships, loving relationships for me, no longer negotiable. Money that honors the contribution that I'm making in whatever environment that I'm in, no longer negotiable. You feel me? And our willingness to do that, our willingness to, from a mindset perspective, to shift into this commitment is, for me, the next wave of the revolution, right? Yes. To recognize, like, you know what? Folks have bled enough. We're here now. So now that we're here, it's our opportunity to actually start to take that ground and to start to own that ground. And then to recognize for that aspect of our folks that are still struggling and navigating in those systems, that we have a responsibility and an opportunity to meet them with the same conversation that invites them into their own transformation and their own liberation. And they are up for it. And I say that because a lot of times we make assumptions about what those folks, quote unquote, right, who are struggling are up for and not up for. In my experience, right, having worked with, you know, from people who are in the C-suite of top 50 corporations in the world to working with people in the villages of Africa who have no shoes. And I'm telling you, the resilience, the capacity, the brilliance, it is all there. Yeah. We know this. But often we don't meet them honoring and acknowledging it because it comes in a wrapper called poverty and systemic subjugation. And look, we know the history. We understand the way that those things have been put in place. But what we also understand is that we have got to free ourselves mentally, spiritually, emotionally to open up the possibility of a different conversation. So when I sit in conversations or I sit in circles with young people or I sit in circles with my brothers or with my sisters who are in that context, they're getting the same information. They're getting the same challenge that I would give a CEO of a Fortune 50 corporation with all of the resources in the world. And here is what I've found. They rise faster.
Amen.
They're more intentional, because the stakes for them are very, very
higher.
Real.
Yeah.
They ain't got a lot of margin of error, if you feel what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So they actually come with a whole other level of commitment and dedication. And so it's our ability and our willingness to see this and own this and recognize this and engage from this place, as opposed to from what has been this historical legacy of this deficit kind of existence that we've been packaged and sold.
Yes.
And that includes when it comes to, and most specifically, when it comes to our right to participate in economy.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh my gosh. Ra, I could just go on and on about you. I'm going to switch gears slightly because I want to get to this other question before we run out of time that was really important to me. So I love this concept in the book that you introduce called the L3. Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to just tell people what the L3 stands for and how, you know, we should be going about using this concept to define our path for how we show up in the world. I think this is a really powerful concept.
Yeah, so I define, and I said this earlier, I define success as a function of alignment. And this is really about being trued up to your vision, to your mission, and to your purpose. And in the context of my work, I describe it as an L3, which represents how you live, how you love, and how you lead. Mm-hmm. And this is the moral compass, you all. This is the thing that we then get to embed in the foundation of our integrity, right? And so how you live is all about what you value and your values. How you love is about the unique combination of talents, gifts, and abilities that you've cultivated or have been given to share with the world. And then how you lead is all about the difference that you want to make. It's that passionate impulse I talked about earlier that guides you towards the opportunities or the challenges that are most facing humanity in our world that you know that you are being called to lean in on. And so when you first of all, create it. And by the way, it's like a thumbprint. So there are no two L3s alike. It's a live declaration, a love declaration, and a lead declaration. There are no two L3s alike. So it is your unique, spoken into existence, context, foundation from which you now get to live, move, and have your being. And when you declare it, and when you start to embody it and internalize this, and I talk about this in the book, when you start to embody it, things get clear very, very fast.
Yeah.
Is this an environment for me or not?
Yeah.
Is this a relationship for me or not? Is this an opportunity for me or not? And so our work then becomes about staying in alignment or realigning. Because as life is designed, we often are getting pulled off our game, pulled off our mark by the forces that be, right? And so the most important work that we can do is to keep coming home to the truth of ourselves, keep coming home to the truth of our knowledge and our gifts, keep coming home to the truth of the contribution that we're here to make. And it literally becomes our compass, right? Or our homing device. Yeah. And so that is the purpose that the Live, Love, Lead declarations play.
And you guys can get your Live, Love, Lead, your L3 together when you go through Ra's book. It's just fantastic. It's actually, what I love about it is it's very workbook style. And, you know, you go through and you read, but you got to do the work. And that's what I love about this. You gave people an opportunity to not just read about it and go, oh yeah, this sounds good. This is something I should do. But to actually do the work on yourself to help guide you forward on your path. You know, there's a couple more things that I'm thinking of right now. So the first is there are people listening who are in a job and in a corporate environment or even in a job that they don't like, but they're working inside of a system. And then there are also people listening who are artists and who are entrepreneurs. And I think from my sense, a lot of what we've been talking about can seem like it is only frameable for people who are in an entrepreneurial space. Like I have the choice of what it is that I can do. How do you apply this work to those who are working in a job, in a system, and maybe don't want to leave that? You know, how do you stay true and get paid and do good in there?
Absolutely. So first of all, it's a state of mind. Let's be very, very clear. It's not functional in the sense of occupation. It is a state of mind. So when I say it's a state of mind, I say we as people who are in business, in other words, if you are receiving money for your services, whether you work in an organization or in a not-for-profit or you're running your own business, you are in business. And the opportunity to think entrepreneurially has everything to do with thinking about the kind of contribution that you want to make, the way in which you want to be leveraging your efforts. And the fundamental question is, do you want to be leveraging your efforts to create more of the solution of what we need in the world, or do you want to leverage your efforts to be more of the problem in the world, right? And so all of us are going to have to navigate that and figure that out. But the concepts and the principles that I offer in this book are universal, no matter where you're standing, because all of us are making a contribution. All of us are living a life. All of us are operating in the context of economy, no matter where we sit or no matter where we stand. And the book gives you the opportunity to say, how do I want to define success? And then how do I now want to live, operate, and move in alignment with that definition that I've created? And the challenge for us in that, both in the call to define and the call to realize, is to consistently keep looking at that which is true for us. Mm-hmm. And my experience is that success is less about what you need to put on and more about what you need to take off and peel away in order to get to the real essence of what matters, what truly matters for you and for those you love.
And, you know, I think when people are asking this question, one of the big questions that I get constantly is people trying to figure out what it is that they're supposed to be doing. What is it? Like, I know I'm meant to do more, but I don't know what it is. And, you know, I love that your teachings, this is one of the things I love most, that it constantly anchors back into the answers are within. And if you don't spend time cultivating that relationship with your highest self, God, the universe, the presence, the spirit, the whatever you call it, then you can't hear. You're only getting your answers as a reflection off of other people. And,
correct.
And so if people are in this space, and I know everybody listening to this podcast at least has an understanding of why meditation or different contemplative practices and stuff is important. When we go into those spaces, how do we start to actually ask and learn what is the what? How do we do that?
Yeah. So I like to describe it as big C and little C. So big C is like, what is it that we're being called to in the context of our life and our life's work? And little C is, what is it that we are being called to in this moment to address, to speak to understand, to lean into? And the little C is connected to the big C, so that even if we can't see the big C, we don't ultimately know where the destination is going to, you know, where the journey is ultimately going to take us. Our willingness to follow the little C,
the little calling,
puts us on the path, right? The baby calling, exactly. Yeah. And we, you know, we joke about it, but it's, you know, it's true in the sense of sometimes we're in a conversation and we'll get a hit, like, go call your cousin in that moment, and we won't know why, and it will, you know, we'll sort of want to lay our logic on top of it and justify it and well and give all the reasons why. But our ability to ultimately be guided to the next level of fulfillment and the next level of expression and the next level of our power and the next level of our freedom has everything to do with our ability to listen and hear in the small things.
Yeah.
In the small things, right? There's a wonderful saying in the Tao Te Ching that the small things are great. And that if you ever want to achieve anything great, that you work on the smallest things in front of you. And our ability and capacity to start there strengthens that muscle. And inevitably, if we follow those impulses, we start to learn how to trust in that voice, even if it's like aligning around the parking spot in front of the yoga studio, right? Mm-hmm. Or checking in on someone because we do get that hit or that questioning. We start to actually get like, oh, wow, our internal GPS actually does work. Our gut actually is in perfect working order. Our heart or these other parts of our body that speak to us all the time are actually really intelligent what they're picking up on and translating. We start to build our confidence in that. Then all of a sudden, we begin to start to see those bigger flashes, those bigger aspects of our purpose and our calling arriving. with us, right? Our job is to stay awake at the wheel. Our job is to stay inspired. Our job is to stay in joy, and our job is to stay in clarity. And if we do those things, even with the things that are just in front of us, the bigger things start to arrive on our doorstep.
This is so wonderful. You know, I love this. Some people will sometimes call it intuition or these different things that, you know, get strengthened as we are more and more committed to listening to the call. And that's why I even think I was talking to a mentor of mine years ago, like kind of a spiritual counselor for me named Brenda Villa. Everybody knows I talk about her on here all the time. And I asked her, I said, why is my intuition screaming about me about dumb stuff? Like, grab that cup out of the cabinet, not this cup, and grab that. And she said, honey, it's training you to listen. It's training you. And so that's why when you have the intuition about the parking spot or whatever, it's not life or death or you're going to meet somebody because you park in this spot. It's training you to hear the right voice. And I think that this is really important for people to understand too.
All about the practice.
Yes. And, you know, I want to close with something that I think is so powerful. And I think this has been the thread or the ocean that we've been swimming in, but it's this aspect of the book, the do good part of the book. And, you know, I'm very inspired by the story and the impact that your father, you know, had on your life, and how from day one you've been, again, swimming in that ocean of doing good for people. So I would love for you to share that story, because I think it's so inspiring and impactful, and also how that has led you to incorporate that do good aspect into the book and why it's so important.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it is the ground that I come from. It is, you know, they were the soil that I grew in, and their example and willingness to always extend themselves in a way that created opportunity and possibility for someone else, like, that was just ingrained in us. And my father in particular, his commitment to always invest in my siblings and I, you know, in terms of knowledge, like, he's one of the most incredible learners I'd ever met in my life. I mean, this is a man who would read 60, 70, 80 books a year with no problem, right? As well as consume in terms of, you know, current events and understanding what was going on in the state of our world. Like, he made it his business to know, to be connected, to understand. And the combination of that thirst and that hunger for knowledge and wisdom, combined with this unwavering generosity to open a door for somebody, to bring someone with them or bring as many people with them as they could, are the things that forged me, you know? And so for me, you know, my buddy Micah says, you know, you are about your father's business. and it is true in every sense of the word, whether we're talking biblically or whether we're talking literally in the context of legacy. You know, I do feel like this is the continuation of his work. And it was always about leaving something better than you found it. It was always about opening a door and making a way. And, you know, we've been conditioned through the craziness of all of the media streams and all of the insanity that we consume to believe that it's hopeless. And that's the most dangerous thing we can do, is believe that it's hopeless, right? The most dangerous thing we can do is to numb out and tune out, right? And I say that not because the goal is to get sucked into those cycles of drama, but actually to exercise the discipline to push away from that, to go within and find your truth about the state of the world and find your truth about what it is that you want to be offering to the kind of world that you want to see, to actually be in service to the world, because you're creating the world. The world is not what you consume on social media. The world is what you choose to create through your commitment to love, through your commitment to share your gifts, through your commitment to show up in your authentic self. And, you know, our ability to know that as the truth is what opens the doorway for the contribution that every single one of us is here to make.
I could just go on and on and on and on. I have so many questions I didn't get to, but I think mostly I want to ask you in closing, for the people listening who are feeling inspired and want to do more, obviously they need to read the book, which I'm going to put a link to in, you know, in the description. But if you could give one word or, you know, piece of advice for the people listening who feel inspired but may feel a little stuck or feel like they've done things, they've read books, they've been listening to podcasts, and they feel like they haven't been moving.
Yeah.
Like, what can you tell them that will actually help people get on the path and get off of the hamster wheel?
Yeah. So the first thing is, even if it is an inch, it counts. Mm. So it doesn't matter how small the action is. I don't care if it's a half an action. Every inch counts. Everything you do matters in the bank of your purpose and your calling. You are enough. You have everything you need. And whatever it is that you see or feel like you don't need, once you start walking on the path, it will find its way to you. The most incredible thing that you can do for you is to come into sacred relationship with you, is to discover all of who you really are, to spend time with you, getting to know you, getting to understand you, getting to listen to you, getting to learn from you, and ultimately getting to love you. And if you do it inch by inch, step by step, day by day, it all counts. It all matters. It is not too late. And you cannot fail. You cannot get this one wrong. So come on, baby. Come on.
Raw goddess, everybody. Thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing your wisdom and your light and your many years of work in the world. I think everyone's going to take so much from this. I will have many links in the description for people to get in with the book and get in with more of your work. But is there anything in particular that you want to shout out to people for them to get in contact with you or anything you have going on that you want people to know about?
Yes. So, you know, along with the book, because so many people came back with questions and are starting to form communities to read the book together, I do want to say we are going to be launching membership pretty soon in May. So please be on the lookout for that. You can follow us and stay in touch with us through thecallingmovement.com. In the Calling Movement, when you come onto that website, you'll find your downloadable resources link, which is also the URL in your book. You'll find all other kinds of bonus content. So just come, let us love up on you, be a part of the community, be a part of the movement. You can always also hit me off at social, at Raw Goddess at IG and Twitter and Facebook. And to just know that if you feel called to lean deeper into the work, there are options that are available for you. There are group coaching programs, there are digital programs, and there are high-level mastermind programs. Check us out at movethecrowd.me. That's movethecrowd.me, as in move me.
Move me, move us, move all of us, y'all. So thank you so much, Raw Goddess, for being with us today. And for you listening, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day and out of your life and out of your schedule. I know the world can be so compelling. And so the fact that you are lending your ears and your hearts and your minds to us today is a privilege and an honor that we do not take for granted. This has been Justin Michael Williams. I love you. I thank you. I honor you. And I will talk to you in the next podcast. Bye for now.